Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what kind of conversation you might hear on the program. Could even be yours if you call 888-914-9149. That's my number. Usually when we start the show, lines are already starting to fill up. So if you get a busy signal, just hit redial. We'll get you on. 888-914-9149. I like to start with good news whenever possible. And a friend of mine sent me this story. I thought it was kind of cool. You may have heard about the protest that's taking place up in Canada right now involving truckers who have descended, you know, upon, I think it's Ottawa. And they have clashed with the government over the issue of things like vaccines and mask mandates and all of the COVID-related restrictions. Well, there's maybe a silver lining to that story, and it actually has to do with some of the truckers who are on the U.S. side of the border. This being reported by KTVQ.com News. Semi-trucks continue to be backed up in the area surrounding the Sweetgrass Coots port of entry at the Montana-Alberta border as a part of a larger movement in Canada called a Freedom Convoy. That's the protest I referred to a moment ago. The convoy was initiated to oppose Canada's vaccine mandates, which require that truckers entering Canada quarantine for 2 weeks if passing into the country without a COVID vaccine. The protest has since gathered support from Canadians opposed to other COVID-related measures, for example, masks, etc. Reporters Lindsay Stenger and Brianna Juno were in Toole County. They talked to some of the truckers who are stuck on the Montana side of the border due to the continued closure of the port of entry. They also talked with some workers in the town of Shelby about how the situation is affecting them. So, I mean, you're doing your thing, working your job, taking care of your business, just like I am and everybody else is. So it's easy to forget about what other people are going through. And in this case, you've got all these truckers up there who are stuck. They can't move over the border. They can't deliver their goods. So the story is interesting. Zed Aldali is a trucker who has been stuck in Montana for about 2.5 days. His freight is full of ground beef. And after 2 days of not being able to reach his intended destination, the possibility of the meat spoiling adds to his stress. This is obviously a lot for us, he says. If our meat goes bad, we will still have to go through the meat expiration checkpoint in order to even cross the border. And if the meat goes bad, we're still going to be stuck here even longer because we can't cross over. Although Aldali has been stuck in Sweetgrass for over 2 days, he's still getting paid by his company. That's good. However, truckers Jason Junk. How's that for a name, Cyrus? Did you ever go to high school with a guy named Jason Junk? Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just wondering. I don't think I've ever heard that name before. It sounds like derivative of a German name. Junker, I think it might be. In any case, Jason Junk and Garnet Lang, independent truckers, which means that they own their trucks, but they work for companies, and each day they're stuck in Montana means they don't get paid. Rob says, I'm an owner-operator, so is the other trucker. And that guy over there, he is too. And yeah, we aren't getting paid. We're out of revenue. Junk estimates his cost per day in Montana is nearly $1,300 a day. He says, each day I'm here, I'm losing money. How do you spend $1,300 a day? I mean, obviously there must be some truck-related expense in there. But a hotel and a meal, I don't think it would get to that amount. But anyway, that's what he's saying. Each day I'm here, I'm losing money. Lang says that in his years of trucking, he has never felt the way he feels here. I definitely run into my fair share of truck holdups in my career, but never one like I feel like a hostage with no end in sight. Every trucker they say they spoke to is far away from family and getting increasingly more irritated as the days go on. But here's the good news coming. Two ladies surprised some of the truckers who were camped out at this point of entry with fresh food, water, and even toiletries. Two truckers that the news organization interviewed said that the station told them about a woman named Holly from Helena, Montana. I didn't know what was going on. I just woke up and there was a woman there passing out soups and sandwiches and water. And I asked her where she was from, and she said that they came from Helena. And she said, the trucker said, I was so touched that people who didn't even know us and probably will never see us again were willing to drive 4 hours to bring us food they probably spent all day preparing. Another trucker said, he want to extend our biggest thank you to those who are willing to help us out. Shortly after the trucker I mentioned earlier, Holly, left, another truck pulling a trailer full of toiletries and even more food showed up. The truckers were unable to get the names of the people who came and brought the food, but said they're incredibly thankful. One said, I cannot express how thankful I am to these women. It brought tears to my eyes. That's cool. That's really cool.
There are good people everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I mean, look, I mean, would it occur to me to say there's a situation on the border? There are truckers stranded. They've been there for 2-3 days. They can't get across the border. They're hemorrhaging money. I think I'll drive 4 hours to bring them food. I don't think most people that would occur to them. Mm-hmm. So hats off to these ladies, you know, that they were thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be willing to go across the street to help somebody, right, Cyrus?
But right. Yeah.
Drive 4 hours?
When it's right in front of me, it's a lot easier to see it and understand what someone's going through. But yeah, drive 4 hours to help a stranger out. That's awesome. I love it.
It is, yeah. I wonder what kind of sandwiches they had. You know, it's not even lunchtime. It's way before lunchtime, but I'm already thinking about that. I wonder what kind of sandwiches they were. But they were made from the heart, made with love. And what did Jesus say? You know, even a cold cup of water that you give to somebody in my name will not go unrewarded. Man, imagine what a chicken salad sandwich is going to fetch in heaven in terms of a heavenly reward. I mean, if you're going to get a reward in heaven for just giving somebody a cold cup of water, Jesus said so. He said it. I believe it. That settles it. So a homemade chicken salad sandwich, please. I think there are going to be people way high in heaven because of the wonderful ways in which they helped other people like that. So maybe that's a good lesson for you and for me to be on the lookout for the, you know, off the beaten path kind of opportunities to share something with somebody else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. I need to start looking more for the opportunities for me to help someone else. That's good.
If you ever find yourself with plenty of chicken salad sandwiches, Cyrus, I can help you out with some of that.
I'll try and get
My wife makes the best chicken salads. It's just amazing. It's like restaurant. It's better than restaurant quality. I guess that's why I thought about that. You guys, I think I've talked to you about this before, Cyrus. Remember how on the show a while back we talked about the little, in the Ziploc baggies, you make the, like what you would hand out to somebody who's panhandling on the side of the street, down on their luck, not able to, they're homeless, okay? And I really like this idea, and we've done it before. I'd like to do it again. I know other people who do it on a regular basis. They get a box of Ziploc baggies, and then they might make 10 or 20 of these little kits that have some toiletries. And you don't want to put something in there that could be misused. Like, I understand that hand sanitizer, some people drink that to get high, so you have to be somewhat choosy. But, you know, toothbrush, toothpaste, comb, chocolate bar, bottle of water, you know, a few other things in there that would make somebody's life easier, mittens in the winter, that kind of thing. We've talked about that on this program, I do believe, haven't we, Cyrus? Because
that's
a great example of
this.
We
ended up getting it was really cool. We got a bunch of calls from people that do just that, and they shared the different things that they share with homeless people or people in need. And it was interesting. A lot of items I never would have thought of. It's just great.
I mean,
the relevant radio listeners are so wonderful. Constantly.
Oh gosh.
They're so great. Just amazing, amazing people.
We must thank them every day, and certainly every time Pledge Drive rolls around, it's awe-inspiring not only the enthusiasm and the generosity, but also the deep loyalty. I'm tempted to say fierce loyalty. So many people show their loyalty to Relevant Radio with many acts of kindness, for which we're very grateful. So yeah, maybe that could be a great going into Lent type of intention, that in addition to doing whatever you may do by way of giving up a favorite food or giving up alcohol or giving up salt or television or whatever it is that you are thinking about giving up, maybe on the proactive side, this is just an idea. Go down to the store and get that box of Ziploc baggies and then get a whole bunch of other things that you think that you might like if you were stuck on the street and you didn't have a place to go and you had to wait outside before the food shelter or the food pantry opens so you can get your next meal. And somebody rolls up and hands you a baggie with cool things in it that you could really use then and there. That could be a great way to start Lent and maybe say, I'm going to make a batch of these every week. And now, of course, if you're living out in the countryside, chances are you're not going to meet somebody in that situation. But many of our listeners, they live in the within city limits. And in some cases, Phoenix, for example, good example. I think a lot of it has to do with the warm weather. But this is a phenomenon you'll see all around the city, where at many different intersections, you'll see sometimes on every corner, somebody who's there with the bucket and the sign looking for some help. Now, is it a scam? In some cases, probably. In some cases, it's probably a job for some of these people. They work their shift and then they're done and they get a cut of what they make. But other people, I mean, there's no way to know. How do you really know who really needs it and who doesn't need it? So making an effort. I don't think Jesus will penalize you. I'll leave this last thought out there. If you are move to be generous to somebody on the street, knowing that, well, maybe this guy's going to go buy beer with it or worse. And let's say you give him $5 and he does do that. Jesus is not going to penalize you. He's not going to say, oh, sorry, that doesn't count because you were generous to this person and he used it to buy beer. So I'm sorry, that doesn't count. I mean, that's between the guy who receives the money and Jesus. But I think you and I should be liberal. We should be as generous as possible. Prudent, obviously. There's a time and place when you have to say, no, this is not the right thing to do. But I think generally speaking, be liberal. Be prodigal in your generosity. That's what I hear from the saints anyway. Cyrus, you look like you want to add something to that conversation. I don't want to move to the next topic without you getting your chance. You have that look on your face.
We didn't talk about this at all. But I have a buddy in L.A. who said the homeless people there, it's out of control. It's just absolutely, the streets are literally littered. I mean, litter is everywhere. But he said that the path from, and I don't know if this is true, this is just from one friend that lives there, but he said the government there is clearing out the path from the airport to the Super Bowl of homeless people, so those flying in won't have to see they won't have to see the
reality. I wouldn't
the
be surprised.
Reality, the reality.
Are
of
they
what
playing
LA
in the Coliseum?
I don't know. I know it's in LA. I don't know what the stadium's called or where it's at.
Well, the Coliseum is the biggie.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Certain it's got to be there. Well. I can understand, from a civic pride standpoint or just, but I mean, talk about smoke and mirrors. All anybody has to do is just get off the 10 freeway or get off the 405 freeway anywhere in LA, anywhere, and drive around and you're going to see tent cities and junkies shooting up on the sidewalk. And it's just a miserable existence for these people.
It looks like the world has ended. I'm seeing some of the photos. It's like that. That's what I've seen end of the world movies, and that's exactly what parts of LA look like. Right
you mean
now.
Like the post nuclear war apocalyptic?
Yes, yeah.
Chaos.
Yeah, it's
yeah. That's a good crazy. Description of parts of Los Angeles.
Have you seen the?
That certainly is.
Have you the railroad tracks? Have you seen how they're being looted? And I mean, it's looks like a dump, but it's the railroad tracks.
Yeah, what they do is they're actually looting the trains. And this is, I don't know if it's the Metro Liner per se, but I have some info on that. Funny you should mention it because it wasn't something I was planning to talk about. This is from Yahoo News. LA has been hit L.A. rather has been a hub of major shipping woes in recent months, with the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach a prominent fixture of the global supply bottlenecks. We know all about that, right? Because of the empty shelves on the grocery stores and the things that you just can't order. You just things that you could normally get in a normal situation that now you just can't get. L.A. Is seeing a wave of smash and grab thefts. Rail heists are now taking center stage. And in the latest example of problems dogging the industry,
it's like the old
over
West.
The weekend. Well, listen, here's some detail. Yahoo Finance saw several scavengers picking through the sea of trash, hoping to find valuable goods like electronics, clothes, or whatever items thieves left behind. Thieves have been raiding the cargo containers and taking packages that belong to people from all over the country. So that FedEx package you were expecting from your friend maybe is now in the tent city somewhere in Los Angeles because one of the thieves broke into the container and got it. They're targeting retailers, Amazon, Target, Macy's, Skechers. I guess that's the tennis shoe company. The National Retail Federation says that the average loss from organized crime topped $700,000 per $1 billion in sales in 2020. So for every billion in sales, $700,000 of it went into a thief's hands. Some of the refuse left behind on the train tracks include pills, dermatology products, home decor, which robbers didn't want because they don't have a home typically, or they're living in a tent, or they simply didn't believe were valuable enough to take. It's an amazing story, and as you're alluding to, Cyrus, it's hitting the trains now because they're vulnerable. There are no police on the train tracks. There's nobody there who's going to stop them and prevent them from looting these cars, which further adds to the stress of the supply chain problems that we've got. So yeah, it's a mess. You plan to go to L.A. anytime soon?
Not a chance. That is, I have scratched it. I've told my buddy, sorry, man, I am not going to be visiting you anytime soon.
Well, I love Los Angeles. I love L.A. I mean, I was born there. And I think that it could be so much better. I attribute it to misgovernance. I attribute it to decades of poor governance and bad policies. I think that would be a big step forward if they could, you know, change some of those things. But the main thing is it's going downhill. And I guess I'm not surprised to hear you say that they're going to clear a swath of homeless people out of the way. I don't blame the homeless people. I blame the people who could be helping the homeless people who aren't. They're just letting this proliferate, you know, and they're going to reap. What's the old saying from the Bible? Sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. Or as the other saying goes, which is not in the Bible, the chickens are coming home to roost. You know, one of these days, Cyrus, I'm going to go through a list of phrases. Maybe I'll do that today if I can find it. I have in my notes a list of common phrases that we use on a regular basis that actually come straight from the Bible. Did you know that? You didn't know that, did you?
I did not.
All right. Too late, Cyrus. Too late. You had your chance. You could have jumped in, but we have to take a break. A man's got to know his limitations, right? Remember? It's okay. We'll be right back with more, including your phone calls, right after this quick timeout. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. We were born to ride. Roll down the wind, put down the top. Crank up the beats for us, baby. Don't let the music stop. All right, yeah, I do love LA. We love it. It could be so much better, but I still love LA. 888-914-9149. You remember this song, Cyrus, Randy Newman? Did you groove on this song back in the day?
No, I did not groove on this song.
You didn't, huh?
No, I'm not a... Randy Newman's great and all, but he doesn't make it into my rotation of music.
How about
that I'm
Short People?
Short People, I don't even
know. He had a lot of funny songs. So he wouldn't qualify as prog rock in your book, would he?
No. Every Randy Newman song sounds like a Randy Newman song. Like, you know immediately.
He wrote the score. He wrote all the music for the Three Amigos movie.
Oh, and don't forget Toy Story.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Did you ever see the old Mad TV skit where they're making fun of Randy Newman?
No.
They have him, like,
I was probably praying when you watched that.
They have him singing, like, Star Wars songs. It's great. I don't know if you can even find it on YouTube, but I'll look for it and send it to you later. You'll get a kick out of it.
Sounds good. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Steve in Florida, thank you for your patience and welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick. My question for you real quick is, during the Mass, at the end of the Our Father, if the priest says a prayer, we respond with, "The thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever." Why don't we ever sing that, say that when we normally say the prayer? Like during the rosary?
Yeah, that's a good question. The reason, as I understand it, is because that's that's called the doxology, and it was never customary in the Catholic Church before Vatican II to ever say that. It was in Scripture, but it wasn't something that was ever said as kind of a follow-on for the Our Father. But in many Protestant churches, it is. So in the working out of Sacrosanctum Concilium, which is the document in Vatican II on the reform of the liturgy, some of the fathers of the council, they thought it would be a good idea to make the Mass more familiar maybe to Protestants by adding the doxology in the Catholic Mass after the Our Father, which prior to that point was not ever there. So that's one part of it. That's one, I guess, part of the background. But the other thing is that when you go to, what is it, Matthew chapter 4, Matthew chapter 5, I'd have to go to that specific passage. Jesus, when he is asked by the disciples, "Lord, teach us to pray," he says, "When you pray, pray like this," and then he gives the Our Father. He doesn't give it, you know, the doxology is not part of that, or at least it's not part of the way he gave the prayer initially. So the custom has always been to say it that way. So I think that's the reason fundamentally why you don't see that typically. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. And the reason I ask is I know this call screen. I recently got out of federal prison after 8.5 years, and I really had to tangle with Protestants over that one.
Yeah. Because of the way they prayed the Our Father?
Yeah. Yeah. And they kept telling us how, and I just never had anything on it to be able to answer them. But I do want to thank you all and station. We found there was about 8 or 10 Catholics in my unit. We used to listen to you during the lockdown. We were locked down from April 1st of 2020 to almost July of 22. And you guys were our lifesavers. We had no Catholic Mass, no communion, no confession. And all we had was your radio station, your show, and the other ones, and Father Simon, and we really, and the rosary at night, and the daily Mass.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Really got us locked down.
Tell me, did any of the non-Catholic inmates listen to relevant radio programming, or was it typically just the Catholic guys who would get together for that?
We tried, and some of them, I had a close friend who was a Protestant, and he also was an Air Force, and he would listen to it. He really liked Father Simon because of the history he gave of the Mass, and he actually was very familiar, being a chaplain's assistant with the Catholic faith. He was Pentecostal, which surprised the heck out of me, but he was a good man. Yes, we tried to get people to listen to it, and they would, and one guy just was getting ready to start listening to it just before I left, and he's getting ready to go through RCIA when I left.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. My understanding is that the Catholic folk in prisons are constantly badgered for their faith by, I guess, like by Protestants and others. Is that the case?
Yeah.
Is that your experience?
Sometimes in my first week in county, I met a man who said, "Oh, you're Catholic. I'm sorry, you're going to hell." And I said, "Why am I going to hell?" He said, "Oh, because you worship Mary. False idols." He said, "You worship false idols." I go, "Who? Mary?" I go, "We don't worship Mary. We honor her the way Jesus honored his mother and father." And I said, "We honor her, and she's the mother, but we don't worship her. And I don't think Jesus would consider his mother a false idol."
No,
and
no,
he
definitely
never talked
not.
To me again.
Yeah.
And I was
well, you know, one thing that you can do is point out that Jesus himself said in his high priestly prayer in John chapter 17, he said, "Father, the glory that you have given to me, I have given to them." So he's speaking about Mary and his apostles and the others.
Apostles,
and
yeah.
He says that he has given them his glory. That's an interesting angle that a lot of people maybe have never noticed before.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I will not be going back to discuss it with them, but if I find any out here in the free world, I will.
Please don't. Please don't go back.
I have no intention. I'm in my second week.
I'm happy for you being out.
Every minute of it.
If I can bend your ear for one more minute, I don't get too many opportunities to speak to somebody with your background. What do you recommend after having been inside for a time? What can, and I'm not talking about pen pals, I'm not talking about, you know, food or anything like that. What can our listeners do to help not just the Catholic guys behind bars, but, you know, everybody, but specifically the Catholic guys? What can people do, if anything, to help them? Are they able to receive, you know, a CD in the mail? I guess it would depend on what kind of facility you're in, right? I mean, can you receive a book? Can you receive some sort of...
Right. I can only speak from the federal facilities because I was in the feds and I was in Denver and I was in Dallas and Siegelville. And you can send stuff to the chapel, to the chaplains, and they can share it with us. We're not allowed to receive, only thing we're allowed to receive from outside in the federal system is books and letters. But Father Matt brought us one Thanksgiving. He was going to do it at Christmas, but the chapel was closed for the Omicron virus. Just happy Thanksgiving cards made from the parish youth group. That meant so much to so many of us. And I guess you continue blessings and prayers during the Our Mercy, Chapel of Divine Mercy, and during the Rosary. I would love to hear more of those dedicated to us. Well, just a part of it, not dedicated, but just a small part, like, hey, help those guys in prison keep their faith. It is a strong bond, and I'm always trying to get ex-Catholics to come back to the church. Both my facilities, I was lucky to have a very strong Catholic group, and I'll be honest, I can honestly say I was a cradle Catholic from all my life and very involved in the church, but I learned more about my Catholic faith in the last 8 years in prison than I did in the free world, and I was actually learning to live the word in prison more so than just doing the acts, going through the steps, volunteering, and thinking that was my thing to do, and but it really helped just listening to the history of the church, Father Simon stuff, things you cover. And I can't just draw a blank on the other show in the afternoon. I'm sorry.
It could be Drew's, could be Timmery's, could be Cale Clark's, could be Josh Raymond. His show comes on right after mine, so that's probably not the one you're thinking of. But, yeah, there are a lot of good programs. Well, Steve, it's been an honor to talk to you. I'm so happy that you're out now. I'm glad to know that things are looking good for you. And thanks for giving us a glimpse inside a prison where Catholic guys have to go for extended periods of time without the Mass, without communion, without probably any ministry at all from a priest. It's sad, and we have to remember it. So thank you, Steve, and thanks for letting us know that it helped you when you were in prison. God bless you. Yeah, Cyrus, I don't know about you, but I can't even imagine what it would be like to be behind bars, you know, to be forcibly locked away. Your life as you know it is on hold for who knows how long, and you're just trying to get through it, and your faith, of course, would be such an important part of it, and yet you don't have, I mean, you can't go to church, you can't go buy a rosary if you don't have one to pray. You really have to turn inward and find that strength. I'm guessing this is how it seems to me, because it's not going to be external to you. So I'm always so happy when I find out that any given jail or prison has a radio in which the inmates can listen to Relevant Radio. What a great gift for them, huh?
Yeah. What a shame that during the lockdown, they weren't allowed to go to confession or receive communion. I don't think I knew that.
I think it was probably just an extension of some of the exaggerated precautions that were taken back when, I guess, a lot of people still really didn't know for sure what was the right thing to do. I mean, to tie into what you just said, Cyrus, okay, let's just make an extension off of that. There were, and I want to get the specifics right here, but there were, where is it? I have it here. Okay, so there were a number of medical scientists who came forward. This is reported in the Washington Times. And they found that there was no, listen to this, little or no impact on COVID-19 deaths because of lockdowns. Remember when all the churches locked down? And that was long about March of, early to mid-March of 2020. And everything's, all the doors swung shut. The churches were closed. Everything was closed. People had to stay home. Mm-hmm. So listen to this. The lockdowns in the United States had little or no impact in reducing deaths from COVID-19, according to a new analysis by researchers at Johns Hopkins University. Again, this is being reported in the Washington Times. The lockdowns during the early phase of the pandemic reduced COVID-19 mortality by about, listen, 0.2%.
What?
0.2%.
What did we do that for then?
Well, I mean, there's still people for whom they just love, they love.
People lost their all of livelihood. They lost their businesses. The emotional impact.
People dying without their relatives being able to get to them.
I wonder what the suicide rates were. I mean, this is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here, just to break it down. So they did a broad review of multiple scientific studies. This would be a meta study where they study the study. So they take all of these different studies and all the data that's gathered in these various studies, and then they study that as a body of information. And one of the researchers wrote in the article, "We find no evidence that lockdowns, school closures, border closures, and limited gatherings had any noticeable effect on COVID-19 mortality." Research had a devastating effect, however, on the economy and contributed to numerous social ills, to your point, Cyrus. The report said, quote, "They have contributed to reducing economic activity, raising unemployment, reducing schooling, causing political unrest, contributing to domestic violence, and undermining liberal democracy. Such a standard benefit cost calculation leads to a strong conclusion. Lockdowns should be rejected out of hand as a pandemic policy instrument." Early on, many states and 186 counties imposed bans on work, socialization, in-person schooling. Think of all the kids who lost maybe a year or two of progress in school because of this.
Yeah, I can
travel
think of
and other
three.
Restrictions.
I can think of three in my own house.
You can think of three right off the top, huh?
Yeah. This is a touchy
I'm
subject.
Sure it, mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe me, I can understand why you feel that way. I really do, and I feel for you. I mean, this is coinciding with studies about, well, you heard some of the reports within the last month or two, certain kinds of masks. Was it Dr. Lena Wen, the former queen of Corpse Mountain? She used to head up Planned Parenthood. And she said that one of the more common masks that people would wear were just facial decorations. They didn't do anything. And, of course, there was a howl of indignation from the people who absolutely loved the masks. They're going to be very sad when the mask mandates go away, as they have in England, by the way. Researchers at the Imperial College in London, speaking of England, they predicted that such steps could reduce the death rates by up to 98%. This is back 2 years ago, but that never happened. According to the new study, researchers Steve Henk, Jonas Herby, and Lars Jonung at Johns Hopkins said, "Overall, we conclude that lockdowns are not an effective way of reducing mortality rates during a pandemic, at least not for during the first wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. They examined deaths early during the pandemic and determined that by the end of the lockdown period that they studied, that was May 20th, 2020, a total of 97,081 people had died of COVID-19 in the U.S. A prominent study at the time had estimated there would be 99,050 deaths without lockdowns. So in other words, just to kind of repackage that, the prominent study that drove many of the policymakers to enact these lockdowns said that there will be 99,050 people who died. Well, they did the lockdowns and 97,081 people died. So it was a minuscule percentage, 0.2% that it may or may not have benefited. And if you're interested in who these people are who are behind this, Hank is the founder and director, co-director of the Johns Hopkins Institute for Applied Economics, Global Health, and the Study of Business Enterprise. Herbie is a special advisor at the Center for Political Studies in Copenhagen. And Jonung is a professor emeritus in economics at Lund University in Sweden. And so the findings are presented in this article with a link to the study itself. And I mean, yeah, everything is clearer in the rearview mirror, that's for sure. But more and more now, what we're seeing is the confirmation that some of these exaggerated, extreme measures that people were taking, including in churches, locking them down, first of all, telling people you can only have a certain number of people in the church. Now, some of that, granted, came from the government and not necessarily from the bishop. I'm thinking about Archbishop Cordiglione in San Francisco, who did battle mightily with the powers that be in the city of San Francisco, because they were intent upon restricting to nearly impossibility levels people's opportunities to go to Mass. And I'm so glad that he stood up against that. And he was vindicated in the end. But yeah, more and more now of this information is coming out and showing just how unnecessary some of these exaggerated precautions were. So, not to say I told you so, but I think that is interesting. And Cyrus, have you posted that article yet? Looks like you have.
I just did.
On the show Twitter
just now.
Okay, thank you. I think we should take a break. 888-914-9149. Now, when we come back, talking about like the way the world changed during COVID, it's changing again right before your very eyes. It has to do with the metaverse. And I've got an angle here I want to share with you that involves your own Catholic faith. You may say, what does my faith have to do with the metaverse? I will tell you right after this.
You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right, Metaverse up next. If you'd like to call and be on the program, the number is 888-914-9149. You may be saying, I'm having a difficult enough time as it is with this universe, much less the metaverse, whatever that is.
I like that.
You ever feel that way, Cyrus?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I don't need another universe to deal with. I'm trying to deal with this universe.
All
of its travails. Let's get a few phone calls done nonetheless. Let's go to David in Sacramento. David, thanks for calling in today.
Oh, you're welcome, Patrick. Last night I listened to your program, the repeat of yesterday morning, and I want to thank you for explaining to us that the best way to understand the Blessed Mother's response to the angel Gabriel is that she had already taken a vow of virginity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you consider that as a possibility, because obviously the Bible doesn't say that explicitly, although apostolic tradition does say that explicitly and has said that continuously, then it begins to make sense why Our Lady reacted in Luke 1 the way she did. I think that's the point you're making, right? Like, why would she react that way if she's already betrothed? She's just about to start living with her husband after the marriage ceremony. And the angel comes all the way from heaven to tell her, hey, guess what? You're going to have a baby. I could understand why this young woman would be puzzled. Like, you know, if she, you would expect that she would say something like, well, yeah, of course, I'm getting married. That's typically what happens. But she doesn't say that. She expresses puzzlement. How can this be? She doesn't understand. And that curious lacuna in the discussion, I think, points to, as some of the church fathers who comment on this said, that there had been a lifelong vow of virginity. And that's what made her so puzzled. Like, how is this going to work? Because God knows this vow I've taken. So I mentioned that just in passing because some of the people who are listening to you right now may not have heard that part of it. But I think that's what you're driving at, right, David?
Yes, I am, Patrick. That is what I'm driving at.
Yeah, well, man, good. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And so are you. Anything more to it you want to discuss, or did we get it?
No, we got it. That was really enlightening for me. That was really, really important. I don't usually telephone. And after I heard that, I said, I've got to call Patrick.
No, you're very kind. You're very thoughtful, David. I appreciate that. And good to know that you're able to catch the program. And keep in mind, I mean, you may already know this, David, but for those just listening who don't know, if you miss any part of the program, not just this program, but any program on Relevant Radio, everything is archived at relevantradio.com and certainly on the Relevant Radio app. So it's at your fingertips any time of the night or day. If you miss anything, you can always get it. Or if you want to hear it again, you may say, well, that I didn't catch it all the way, or I came in the middle of it. I'd like to hear it all the way through. It's easy to do. So thank you, David.
Okay. You're welcome, Patrick.
Good to talk to you. 888-914-9149. Okay, so Cyrus, I can't help myself. I need to talk about the metaverse. And I honestly, to be completely frank with you, I knew within, you know, let's say the last several years about virtual reality, and I'm guessing that that has been available to the average person with the virtual reality headsets and things for maybe, what would you guess, 10 years perhaps, that the technology has been around for the average person to go into Best Buy and pick one up? I'm guessing 10 years.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
That would have been very expensive 10 years ago, but probably in the last 4 or 5 years, it's become a little more affordable.
I told you about my son, Stephen.
Yes.
Who got the, that was, for me, it was such an education because as we talked about on the program, so he's just turning 21. He's our youngest. And a friend of his gave him a VR headset. And I thought that it had to be plugged into like a gaming console or something. And he said, no, this is completely self-contained. And you can do stuff with it through your phone. And so his phone, I guess, is a way to activate some programs. But I wasn't sure what to expect. He said, here, try it on. I figured it would be kind of cartoony and kind of hokey and kind of obviously fake. And I know I'm repeating myself again redundantly, but I was shocked at how absolutely realistic it was. Now, the first thing was he said, okay, give me a street address. So I gave him a street address of a house that we used to live in before he was born. And he plugs it into his phone. That goes into the VR. And I'm standing in front of that house. I think it was through Google Street View. So that's understandable because Google Street View it's a picture. It's a photograph. So no wonder it would seem so realistic. And we did that with a few other ones. So that was surprising enough. But then he said, well, here's a game. And it was like a World War II game. And suddenly I found myself inside of a bombed out cathedral and German soldiers were trying to shoot me.
Oh, you didn't tell us this.
Yeah, I didn't tell you. Yeah. So that was the next thing. So before he put me in that scene or that place, he said, I'm going to put you into this World War II game. So put the head or the headset. I put it back on. And it was so strange. It was a weird sensation because I couldn't tell that it wasn't real. It's hard to explain. Have you done this before, Cyrus? Have you ever put these on and,
yes,
and like experienced?
Yep. Okay.
So you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do. Yeah. It's
okay.
Crazy how real it
couldn't
feels.
Yeah. I couldn't tell. I mean, so at first I had to get I had to adjust to it and just look around. So everywhere you turn, you can look up, you down. It's like you're standing in a room. And I was literally standing in a room, and it appeared like it was something during World War II and maybe an office building or where the general and his staff might be. And you can hear a typewriter clicking in the background. And so it took me a few moments to adjust to the fact that this wasn't real. But everything in my senses said, this is real. And then he said, okay, get ready. And then next thing I know, I'm in this scenario where I'm in this bombed out cathedral. So the only reason I'm going into this detail is because for me, the metaverse, artificial reality, all of these things were for me just sort of academic. They were concepts. They were ideas.
This is still the Pong era of virtual reality. I think it's going to get to a point where people will not want to live in the real world because the virtual reality world will be more real to them and it'll be much more enjoyable.
I believe you are 100% right. Now, I don't want to go down any, gross roads or anything, but I'll just mention that part of what you're referring to, I believe, is going to be the pornography industry. I mean, why wouldn't they just completely try to take over this new format? And, there are already enough people, countless people, who are already ensnared in that as it is. So to become immersed in it in a kind of a virtual reality, it's just going to get worse, it seems to me. But even if it's not that, even if that's not part of it, and I believe inevitably it will for many people, but even if it's not, I mean, I could see where, especially if you're young and maybe you're working just a job that you don't really care about one way or the other, and you've got a lot of free time and you've got this virtual reality headset, I could see what you're talking about, Cyrus, where people are going to prefer that world to this world, and they'll prefer, their persona. What do they call them? Skins that you can put on your avatars. And if you come up with one that you really like and that's your alter ego, and in that world, you can do things that you certainly can't do in this world, like maybe be attractive to women or successful or handsome or whatever it may be. I can see where people will start to detach from this world more and more because that world has so much more to offer. But of course, it's none of it's real. And that's why I'm startled. I guess in a way, I'm kind of horrified that people are actually spending, in some cases, hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars on pixels on a screen to buy pseudo real estate in this world. And I expect that a year or two or five from now, when I re-listen to this segment from the show, I will laugh at how naive I am right now. And who knows, there may be people saying, oh man, if only you had bought some of that digital real estate back when it was cheap, because you can't get it now without paying a pretty penny. I mean, it all seems so bizarre and strange and impossible, but it's actually happening.
Yeah.
What kind of skin do you have in the metaverse, Cyrus?
One with a full head of hair. There was a Bruce Willis movie, I don't know, 10 years ago, I think it was called Surrogates, and it was basically the whole world was living in their office. They'd have like a closet that they'd go and sit in for 12 to 16 hours a day, and they would project their consciousness into like a skin, but that skin moved around in the real world, and they won't even have to do that. They won't even. The real world will just be this wasteland where everyone is sitting at home with their eyes glazed over.
In their lazy boy.
Yeah.
They'll be sitting in the Barca lounger with the VR headset and a beer off to the side.
Do you think? I don't know where this is going to go, but do you think cultures like that support ISIS are going to be doing that?
Say that again now.
It's a very, a North American, this is something that's happening here in our culture, right? So do you think there's other cultures that we might not always play nice with? Do you think their culture is going to be doing that? So while we're all, you know, these giant human beings that all we do is sit in recliners and stare at screens all day and we live in a virtual reality, there's a real world where we have people that are not our friends and could even be considered our enemy not doing that. And
look, I'm pretty confident to, I guess if I can answer your question, I think that Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping are probably not wasting hours of the day on virtual reality. They're probably like,
Exactly where I was going. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was stumbling and stumbling. Thank you for saving me.
No, I mean, I get it, what you're saying. And that will be, I mean, talk about psychological operations or psyops. I mean, wouldn't it be in China's best interest to just get everybody as much as possible in countries that they want to dominate, like the United States, for example, just get them all drugged up with virtual reality so that they're just like, it's so into that that they don't have any time to deal with the reality that's creeping up around them. I can see that. Absolutely, I can see that. Well, thanks, Sarah. So when we come back, I want to share with you some recent details about things like the value of real estate in the so-called metaverse, and also how this may very well impact your Catholic faith, of all things, right after this.